Net neutrality offers the idea that all data on the internet is created equal. Whether you want to watch a video on YouTube or on Netflix, you can watch it with the same amount of speed and ease of access. Well, we know that's not quite true. Last week, the FCC approved fast lanes on the net. This will allow internet providers like AT&T or Comcast to charge more for faster delivery of content. The decision is open for 4 months for a comment period before the FCC writes those final rules. And there's a lot of passionate comment going on about an open internet. Briar Dudley says, before you get out in arms about this, consider whether or not net neutrality is a myth. He joins us now. Briar Dudley writes for the Seattle Times. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
What is the argument the internet freedom advocates are making about net neutrality?
Well, they're worried that if the FCC enables internet service providers like Comcast and Verizon to charge for special access and special fast lanes, that other people will be discriminated against. That if, say, their preferred customer gets to move faster over the internet, that others might not. Also, that if they start erecting toll lanes and things like that, it might inhibit innovation and, you know, eventually lead to kind of a more complicated system. You might not have people just creating things and having this free sandbox where they can come up with whatever they want on the internet.
Is that a possibility?
Well, maybe. You know, it's a little bit of a possibility now. The net neutrality is a noble concept. We should aspire to this openness and freedom on the internet. At the same time, it's a little more complicated than that. It's been a place where companies that have more money can pay for better equipment and better services and get faster access already. So the rub comes right now when you've got a few companies that are really dominant in the traffic department. You've got Netflix and YouTube. They're taking up about half the internet traffic right now at peak times. And then you've got Comcast and Verizon, AT&T that are kind of connecting you this last mile that's connecting your home. And those guys are having to invest a lot to keep up with the traffic. At the same time, they're trying to develop their own internet services too. So we can't really trust their motives here. It's not just that they want to be able to charge to, you know, handle the traffic. There's probably a commercial interest as well, because Comcast is streaming video, and, you know, Verizon's running video services, AT&T's running video services. So you wonder, are they trying to just, you know, collect for the services that they're providing, or are they trying to make it more difficult and costly for their competitors?
Hence the FCC engaged in this debate. How do you get content to load so quickly right now? How does it work? Walk us through that a little bit.
Well, let's say take a Netflix. To make Netflix videos deliver quickly, and so you get a good stream coming onto your TV or your tablet or whatever you're watching, Netflix works with all kinds of internet providers. Actually, you might subscribe via Comcast, so you give Comcast $50 a month. Well, on the other side, there are all these different companies that are connected together to make the internet work, and there are warehouses basically around the country, around the world, that Netflix has been renting to get its content closer to your house, because really geography is a factor here too. If you had to trickle your videos from California every time you watched them, you know, that takes a little bit of time. So Netflix has already been cutting deals here and there to kind of warehouse the content locally. So when you want to watch, you know, Downton Abbey reruns or something like that, it's loading locally, and it comes quicker and you get higher definition. So the company's already been having to cut deals left and right to make that work. But the question now is about this last mile. Should from that data warehouse to your house over Comcast, should they have to pay for a fast lane to get, you know, priority handling there?
Or should there be only fast lanes?
Well, yeah, exactly. And if they were to pay for a fast lane, you know, I think, you know, maybe that's going to have to happen because there's so much traffic that they're bringing over. But would that negatively affect everybody else? You know, you're paying $50 a month. You expect everything over that pipe to move at the same rate. You know, should you weren't expecting to pay extra to have, you know, Hulu come over. You know, so anyway, the question is discrimination. Will you still get the same level of service? Will other people coming across the pipe still get the same level of service? Or will they somehow have a negative effect from the fast lane?
So why do you call the idea of net neutrality a myth? Maybe it's a myth currently, but is it, if we are aspiring to it, shouldn't the FCC set rules up that get us there?
Well, yeah, that's another thing, is the FCC has talked about this, and they've tried to write rules to preserve net neutrality over the years, but they never went far enough. It was mostly talk, and that's what's precipitating this thing right now, is there's a court ruling in January where the court said, you know, you don't have authority to do this. You haven't gone far enough, because back in 1996, they decided the internet was kind of an extra thing. It wasn't on the same level of essential service as phones or electricity or anything like that. So they never went so far as to say broadband is critical, we have to regulate it. They just talked about how important these principles are. And now that's all kind of coming to a head. So the question now is, should they reclassify broadband as an essential service and bring this new level of regulation, which, you know, then they could guarantee net neutrality and things like that. But that might also stifle the internet because there'd be all this new regulation.
Barry Dudley is technology columnist for the Seattle Times. So you were looking at different ways of approaches that have taken place in the past. The Internet 2 was an example where the institutions set up a pathway for research. Do we need an Internet 3? And if so, who pays for it and who's on it?
Yeah, exactly. That's a great question. Internet 2 is a cool project, and UW here was one of the early participants in that. They've got a super crazy fast internet that connects these universities around the country. They don't get affected by all the traffic bottlenecks and things like that on the regular internet. You know, I floated the idea that perhaps there should be something like that for video. Take Netflix and YouTube out of the equation, and we don't really have this problem as much. And maybe they should have a special delivery system for internet video. Actually, we do have a special delivery system. It's called broadcast TV.
And right, or cable.
Cable, exactly.
So we set up a system. There may be a system. That's one proposal. Have an internet system that functions along just outside the realm of what we have now.
Yeah, although that's complicated because at some point that system has to connect to your house. And, you know, where it connects, where you pay that fee, there's a toll. And, you know, what are the rules around that toll?
Right, which is not going to be solved when they come down with their rules on net neutrality.
It's horribly complicated. Everybody's mad. People are mad on both sides. Nobody seems to know the way forward.
Brad Dudley is technology columnist for the Seattle Times. You can read his column about net neutrality in the paper, online, actually. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
This is The Record.